Hello and welcome to another CG Garage episode number 17, brought to you by Chaos Group. Recorded this episode about a month ago or so, and it'll become pretty clear when you hear it because we make references to things that happened a while back. But nonetheless, I think it's the right time to do it. I was looking at our listenership, and it seems our listenership is growing quite a bit, so I'm pretty happy about that and figured might as well just see what we can do. And the reason I need that is because I'd like our listeners to be able to do something for us and help spread the word about something. This podcast is very much modeled after a podcast I love called The Nerdist, and I explained at the beginning of the podcast why they are important. But basically, what this podcast is about the fact that the VFX industry has been losing respect. A lot of people just say, oh, it's just done on computers these days, not realizing that it's not computers that generate all those effects. It's actually a sea of artists, and artists are sort of not seen as being important anymore. So I explain all of this in the podcast. I'm not going to dwell into it. But once you do listen to it, what I'd like you to do is to help us by using the Nerdist podcast to see if we can try to have them help us reach out and spread the word about respecting VFX. So you can reach out to them on social media. They're on Facebook and Twitter and Google Plus, whatever you want, and see if you can go out to them, say, hey, Nerdist, you know, please go out there and listen to the CG Garage podcast, send them a link to this podcast, and let them know that we need their help to respect VFX, and use the hashtag #respectVFX, and see if we can sort of make an influence on them, and maybe hopefully make an influence on everyone. I'm planning on doing several other podcasts along the lines of why visual effects tends to be overlooked in terms of the importance of what it is by the general public. So this is just the first one. Thanks a lot, guys. Bye.
Welcome to another CG Garage where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's good. All right, so here's our situation. What is this podcast about? I had this idea where I was getting frustrated. I modeled this podcast very closely in terms of the format and the way we're doing it after the Nerdist podcast, which I'm a huge fan of, as you guys know, because I come in probably every day.
What a shocker.
Right. Probably every day and guys tell you what I heard on Nerdist, right?
That's why I don't listen to it, because I already get it.
Share us a link at like 11 o'clock at night from some article you read there.
Right.
Oh, I don't read those.
Well, that's from The Verge.
Verge, right.
It's either, right to your spam. I either send links from The Verge or talk about podcasts on Nerdist podcast. Now, for those of you that don't know the Nerdist podcast, it's a really cool podcast done by Chris Hardwick. And it's called Nerdist because they talk about nerdy things, right? Comic-Con, stuff like that. But they also talk a lot about science and things of that nature. They talk a lot to celebrities and directors and things of that nature. But they really hearten themselves as being nerds, right? And they also have, there's probably one of the biggest podcasts around. They're probably between him and Marc Maron. There's probably the two, and Adam Carolla, probably the three biggest podcasts out there that are doing stuff. So they have a lot of influence. And one of the things that frustrates me with it is that several times he mentions VFX and how he doesn't like it, how it's all just done on computers these days. And it really angers me because he should know better. he's a nerd. He should understand that. On top of that,
he's not really a nerd. Ooh.
You know what's even the other irony is that his ex-girlfriend was John Dykstra's daughter. So
maybe there's some.
But you think they were talking about VFX?
No, because she's all into cosplay and stuff. But it really kind of.
Then they definitely weren't.
Yeah. Well. It's good. I'm glad I have you guys here because you guys are totally acting like Matt, Myra, and
imbeciles.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Which is exactly what Matt and Jonah do on the Nerdist podcast. So it's perfect. So I like I said, I have a huge respect for that podcast. I have a huge respect for the way they do things, but it's just one point that really upsets me. Okay. So but I also know that they have a huge amount of influence and a huge amount of people that listen to them. And so I actually feel that I would like to try to, the small amount of listeners that I have on this podcast, I want to reach out to Nerdist Podcast to make the point about respecting VFX. All right. So I want to reach out to say, hey, and here's why. Here's what got me thinking about it. He had an interview with Gillian Anderson that she's the
X-Files,
right?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Scully.
Do you remember this? Do you remember this, David?
I didn't hear that, but I had a thing for her at one time.
Well, a lot of people did. And so did he, clearly, from the interview. And she was charming and wonderful. And one point they made a joke about how they said, well, would you want to bring the X-Files back? And I said, yeah. She goes, well, I would love to, but you know, it's never going to happen, blah, 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 blah. And I said, we're going to make this happen. And he goes out to Lisa, just hashtag X-Files 2015, everyone, and let's go out there. It went like gangbusters. And guess what happened? A month later, they announced that X-Files is coming back. So, and they all attributed it to the Nerdist podcast. And I think that it's possible to do that. So I actually want to do the same thing to Nerdist. And I want to do hashtag respect VFX.
The power of rumors.
Right. Power of rumors. Yeah. Well, and I want to explain it because I really want to make sure, respect VFX, but I'm not angry at Nerdist. I'm certainly not angry at Chris Hardwick. I think he's an amazing person. I just want him to be able to hear why I think that VFX is important. And sort of going against the arguments that keep saying that it used to be so much better in the old days and now it's just done on computers. And there's like several points I want to make about this. So, and feel free to jump in anytime.
No, we're going to let you stand on the soapbox for a little while. That's
fine. I was going to tip it over.
All right. All right. So when someone says it's all done on computers, what do you guys think?
Well, they imply that it's easy and anybody can do it and it's not as good as it used to be.
Right. Like it's like there's a big giant done button somewhere.
Somehow it's fake because it's done on computers. Instead of styrofoam and whatever else they use.
Right. There's some sort of giant room that just calculates these things and that's it.
Yeah. Right. And David, what do you think?
It has a stigma to it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a stigma, but there's also, for me, it's like, it's an educational aspect because how many people realistically sit behind the computer and look at the interface of any one of these compositing programs and modeling and, you know, anything like that for the first time and not be completely lost and overwhelmed. And for a lot of people, they've never seen the cockpit before. They don't know what the canvas is like that these people live in 10 to 12 hours a day.
Right. So when people say, oh, look at all the work that went into that miniature that they were talking about, and that's how it was so cool. Look, they made miniatures. It was so cool. The people behind the computer are doing the same thing. They're just not doing it manually with foam core. They're doing it on a computer. And they're doing the same thing, and in some cases, even way more detailed. Mm-hmm. And the thing that also upsets me is when they say, oh, it's all done on computers these days, and I'm sure people like Chris Hardwick stick around after the end of the movie and see the credits. That's a list, a sea of names.
Yes, yeah, huge.
It's a sea of names.
It's like all of a sudden the whole screen turns white.
A wall of names.
Yeah. And it's 1,000 people plus that are up there. That's not computers. Those are artists. Those are talented, talented people that are putting a lot of work into that you're immediately dismissing as being just done on computers. And that's the thing that upsets me. At the same time, that's what I mean by respect VFX, right? But so with that said, why is it that people don't like VFX anymore? Why is it that people don't like what's happening? What do you guys think?
Well, I think part of it is there's a little bit of a backlash in the amount of big giant movies that come up. Like we're almost too saturated. There's every week, in fact, every single week, right? There's a new big boom. And
whiz bang.
and I think also that there's a bit of a stigma about VFX driven films, right, where some of the public will say, well, it's not a story-driven film, or it's not something that's relatable, and then people suddenly just kind of dismiss it, which obviously is not true. I mean, visual effects, there's a lot of visual effects in films that people have no idea that it's even there and it's driving the story. And right. Story is story, right? If you have a great story and you support it with, you know, great acting and great visual effects, et cetera, it stands on its own. But I think there's a stigma about, oh, if it's just a lot of big explosions and robots and stuff like that, forget it.
Okay, but obviously they're not forgetting it because those are the tickets that are selling the most tickets, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So people are seeing those movies, even though they say it's all just computers these days.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit that frustrates me.
Well, people kind of want to have a reason to say, well, I didn't like it that much, you know.
Oh, so you think it's just like, it's like a guilty pleasure?
Yeah, you know. Yeah. Some people that, you know, don't like to go to McDonald's, but when no one's looking, they'll go.
Right. So Transformers is really dumb, so I'm gonna go at 11 o'clock and pretend I'm sick.
I don't even know if that's the real reason or not, but it seems like people always look to find something negative about everything.
Okay.
I mean, look at all the, you know, comments on YouTube. You can guarantee whatever it is on YouTube, a big chunk of the comments are going to be negative,
right?
Whatever the YouTube video is about.
Well, I think, you also know? People are more jaded now. I mean, it takes a lot more to blow people away with visual effects.
Well, yeah, the bar keeps going up and up and up. Yeah.
It keeps going up and up and up. I mean, you see this stuff. I mean, like, compare Game of Thrones to, say, Sliders.
You know? Right.
Good old days.
It's like it's just gone to such a level that it just doesn't, it doesn't have, unless you do something really different, it just doesn't quite have, I feel like, the impact overall that it did before. You're so used to seeing so much of this stuff in every trailer that you see. And also, Once Bitten, Twice Shy, you see a lot of these amazing trailers and then you go see it and then it's less than the popcorn movie that you were hoping it was going to be.
Yes. Yeah, that's an excellent point. Excellent point. So let's, I don't think people are blaming the tool and the computers for the problem when I really think it's the people that are using that tool and that problem that are the issue. I think the studios are driving those specific, that McDonald's, the studios are driving the idea that everyone will go to McDonald's, but they don't care about the quality of the food anymore. And they're blaming they're blaming us, the VFX artists or the computers or the software that does it for the problem, when it's really just not good content or the same content over and over again.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to throw out a crazy hypothetical moment in time where it all started. And it's the Star Wars effect, right? Like if you think of Star Wars and you think of like, well, that's kind of the traditional bar of practical visual effects. And then we entered a realm of doing digital VFX and we got Jar Jar Binks. And honestly, I think like that one moment in time screwed it for a while. And we're still digging out of that
bad
hole.
Taste.
Yes, maybe.
I can tell you, we know that my movie tastes are like not highbrow. Right. I like stuff that, you know, I like shit that explodes and blows up. And I think Michael Bay is awesome. Right. But
there's nothing wrong with
which
that.
Is why I'm so glad you're on this podcast, because it's one of the most confusing things about you. I have such ultimate respect for you, for your intelligence, for your sense of design, your everything.
Talking about
and
movies,
and
right?
Then you're like, Birdman was too, fuck it. No, it's, I just wanted to go see something else. Just, Fast and Furious, way better movie.
It's slow. Like, I want to see like cars drive off cliffs. And
man, there hasn't been an explosion for like 15 seconds.
Yeah.
What am I going to do?
Though I will say I had a Jar Jar Binks moment when that came out. I was like, well, there's something wrong here.
Yeah.
And then I remember we watched the last Superman movie, Superman...
Oh, that was terrible.
I didn't see that one. And the thing that was crazy to me was like, it was the first time that I saw a film where I was like, I think there might have been too many visual effects, and utmost respect to the guys that worked on it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But I remember shit was exploding. And then while that was exploding and falling, crumbling down, then that shit was exploding, right? So it was like an explosion on top of
me. The amount of destruction was out of control and completely unnecessary.
Well, didn't they hire some legal team to review that? And it was like, oh, the amount of things that were destroyed in this film was trillions of dollars.
It's like, yeah, it was a little.
Well, it's harder to follow sometimes. Some of these action sequences are these explosions. It's like you just complete. It's like with the Transformers movies. It's hard to follow who's doing what and what's going on in a lot of those sequences, and it gets to be overwhelming.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Maybe that's part of the problem, right?
Part of that is that now with the computers, you can blow up the White House, you know, 20 different times, 20 different ways.
Again.
Yeah, again and again. And you can, you know, do, you know, multiple takes of it and all this stuff, you know, and it's very, quote, easy to do anything.
Right, but, right. It's all possible.
Yeah, it's all possible. So now that it's possible, we do it and you keep doing it and people maybe get tired of it. I don't know.
Yes. I do.
Yeah, I mean, I still remember the Super Bowl ad where you see the White House getting blown up for Independence Day and thinking, oh my God, I have to see this movie.
And that was a real explosion, I believe.
Yeah, that was a miniature. Yep.
Yeah. So it's not necessarily that the computer is the problem or that the digital effects are the problem. Maybe it's the effects period. There's just too much of it.
It's not that, you can't say the reason that explosion of the White House was good is because it was done practically. I mean, you'd look just as good, if not better, on a computer.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so the problem is like how to use your tools, right? And you can't blame the artists that are involved in this are incredible, and the technology that's involved is insane. The amount of science that goes into visual effects is far, far, like, one of the most incredible things around. Like, just the idea of using ray tracing and irradiance cache and understanding all of this technology, fluid dynamics. Let's just use the idea of fluid dynamics. The amount of research is done to make fluid dynamics as powerful as they are is incredible and allows for the most amazing things. And what do we do with it? We do beer commercials. And we do explosions of, you know, so for some crappy movie. Okay. And so why is it that we're doing that? Or then we do the other thing, right? We create a ZBrush sort of revolutionized characters design, revolutionized it. Everyone had to hand model things in polygons before. Now you can sculpt like a sculptor and do some of the most incredible things. And then what do they ask for? The same monster. Over and over and over and over again. And it's the same design that they do. And it's not the artist's fault. But the problem is now that you've got a sea of artists and they're all inspired by the same thing. Like, they've never tried to vary it because it's like, yep, no, we're going to make this one look just like the alien monster. It's basically, they all look the same.
Well, even on a little bit more fundamental level, just aliens and creatures in general pretty much always have two arms, pretty much always have legs, pretty much have one head, maybe a couple. But, you know, it's all very the same.
Right.
You know?
But no one's being given a chance to do something good, even though they have some of the most incredible tools around to do it. And what frustrates me is that people aren't trying to do anything different. They're too scared to do something different, and they're blaming it on the visual effects instead of actually blaming it on the people that are not willing to take the risks. And I'm very, like, this is what disappoints me. It's like, oh, I remember when it was done practically, it looked so much better. No, did it really? I mean, Flash Gordon looked terrible. And that was done practically, right? I mean, it was, you can talk about how awesome it was because it looked like crap, but it was crap, you know?
How dare you talk ill of Flash Gordon?
But the reality is that it's not, right? And even, you know, I, and I, again, here's the irony, right? I'm still a purist. I want to watch Star Wars unfucked up by George Lucas, right? And it makes a difference to me. And I look at it because I want to see those mistakes. I want to see it. Does it make it a better movie because of that? Yeah, it just sets it in the right appropriate time to me, right? Is it better that he fixed a bunch of stuff? Yes. Is it better that he added and changed the story? No. But I mean, the explosion of the Death Star, when you see it unaltered, it pretty much just looks like a sparkler going off, right? And that's fine. Does that mean it's a better explosion? I don't know. But I'd rather find a way that we can embrace visual effects in a more important way.
Well, I think one of the challenges with computer graphics is that it tends to look, it has a shorter lifespan because it changes and improves at a much faster rate than the decades and decades worth of work that was done with traditional matte painting, miniature, model making and miniature set building and everything like that. So something like Star Wars or, going on the old Star Tours is going to look, it's going to hold up longer than, say, looking at those visual effects in the remastered Star Wars or something like that. Like that looked dated faster.
Yeah, but
sooner than looking at an old set.
But Star Wars, while it was very important in the visual effects side of things, I mean, the reason it's still, let's just call it an important movie, is because it has an important story, right? And people like that story. My kids watch it and they're not just saying, it's not like they're watching Superman where it's like, well, it was just a bunch of destruction. You know what I mean? They're looking at that and they're like, oh, when Luke did this and when, Darth Vader, oh, I can't believe it was his father. I mean, they
spoiler alert.
I can't watch the movie now. I already know.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's what's important to them, right? Those are the characters and the story that was going on. And the visual effects was what made it so incredible to us, right? But to them, that's standard. They're still interested in the story. And so we look at it and we've gotten used to the story as well. I mean, used to the effects as well, but the story is still what makes it so cool to watch. And I don't think people are focusing on story anymore. Obviously they're not. I mean, just even Avengers, right? The destruction stuff in the last Avengers movie, interesting stuff. But I felt that there was a lot of lack of character building that was going on in that, because they already established, that's the other problem with that movie, is that they've already established all the characters from previous movies. So you don't have time to really embrace it. Like Iron Man, when he came out, like you got to know that character and you were right. Like, he was awesome, right? You'll watch it over and over again. That's already established in Avengers. Now all they're going to do is just destroy New York, right? So that's kind of a little bit sad that that's what happens.
And there's something too about the especially in the superhero stuff with the destruction, you never really feel like anyone's in peril, right? It's like, oh, well, it's just, it's blowing up, but you're not scared for that actor or that, that character. You're like, well, they're going to survive.
Right. I mean, they could even die. And if you follow comics that everyone comes back. So you're not even that sad if they die.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, one of the things that I think is interesting is this huge wave of television visual effects. And there's obvious examples where people know that there's VFX in it and sort of, I think it's going the other way where they're like, yeah, Game of Thrones is awesome. The visual effects support it. And the dragons are great. And that, and then there's a whole slew of shows that I bet you people don't even know that there's visual effects in it. Like you look at something like Boardwalk Empire or any of those other type of shows like, oh, I had no idea that there was any visual effects in it, and it helps the story. And
it's, we were talking to a couple of independent filmmakers and about some of the stuff they do. And it's been really great. And one of them was David Levy, who was here, and Miguel as well. And they were talking about their stuff. And what's interesting is that they say they're visual effects people. They work in the tools and the mediums of what they do. And they know a ton of people do it. Yet they avoid using visual effects because they don't want it to spoil their story. They want it to complement the story. They're doing the right thing because they know the problem, right? And that's what's important. It's like using visual effects the appropriate way. And but at the same time, there is such good technology and stuff that's being done in visual effects. It's just not being used appropriately. And blaming the computers is, again, something that upsets me. But I want to go to another story. And that's the Oscars this year. What do you guys think about the outcome of the Oscars? Just curious out of that.
Well, when you were talking about scientific, you know, discoveries and so on, the whole idea of the black hole in Interstellar and everything, that's what I thought of. I think it's pretty interesting that there was a whole kind of big bunch of research that was done, and that actually led to, you know, some scientific interest.
Well, and I think that's exactly it, right? Because there's been a bunch of people in visual effects that know the challenges that are going on, and they were shocked that Planet of the Apes did not win the visual effects. Because Planet of the Apes was incredible in terms of the visual effects that they did.
Unbelievable.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I remember watching it going, holy shit.
Right.
Like, this is, like, we're in a time when this is possible. Because, right. I mean, all of those apes with hair and the performance capture and wet, there was the scenes where it was, like, raining and wet. Like, holy crap, this is... This is unbelievable.
It is unbelievable, right? And it's incredible they do this. But the problem is, general audience, whatever. I've seen it before.
Right.
Right? So what... Well,
their take is, it's another Planet of the Apes. Haven't we done this 16 times?
Exactly. So what happens, those of you who may not know about how the Oscars work, we can talk about it a little bit. There's a first stage that happens where there's a small committee who are the experts in visual effects of the Oscars, and they narrowed down to about 10 films. I think it's about 10 films that are going to be considered for an Oscar, okay? Those 10 films go to a session called the Bake Off, okay? And that means everyone in the Academy who is in the Academy because of a visual effects award or had been added to it or becomes a visual effects branch of the Academy, every one of those members then votes on the top five of those. And those are the ones that are actually nominated for an Oscar. So now it's basically all the visual effects people voting on the top five movies. And most of the people involved, it's like, Planet of the Apes is one, but they, you know, all five of those are great. And one of them is X-Men, which I'm going to be talking to Lou later today. I'm very excited about that.
That's cool.
So anyway, so that comes down to that. Then once it goes to the actual Academy voting, when you're voting for who actually wins the Oscar, that goes to the entire Academy. So everyone who's involved in anyone involved in the Academy votes on the movies. Now, when it comes to visual effects, that means that that's a much, much more non-visual effects people are voting than visual effects people are voting on who has the best visual effects. And those people, I think it's almost like 75% are actors, right? So people that are not necessarily know much about visual effects, and they're going to look at Planet of the Apes and go, it's another Planet of the Apes, like you said, but very smart of what happened just before the voting happened, news went out about Interstellar, mm-hmm. about how they did research, and that research got published into a scientific paper. So how do you think the Academy is going to react when they see that? It's like, there's a movie about a bunch of monkeys, they look really cool. Or there's a movie that helped foster science of black holes.
Right.
And that's what's important. Now, it also stands to my argument like, hey, by the way, that's how cool visual effects is that we can actually change the way that people look at science or see things. And it's not just for, you know, destroying all of New York in Superman, right?
Yep.
Or Metropolis or whatever it is. So that's what I think is so important, is that the Academy saw that. They saw the importance of it in the science, and that's great. And I think the vote was legitimate. I think it was good that the Academy recognized science in that way. And it's certainly not dismissing what was done on Planet of the Apes. It was amazing. And the hair, I know what it's like to do. I mean, it's all almost along the lines of digital humans, right?
Yep.
Because it's digital apes, and they're probably the best it's ever been done. And it's incredible. But that the Academy saw the opportunity to award something for advancing science. And I think that was a good call that happened. I respect that. And I think it's, you know, especially since, you know, they built a ray tracer that can bend time. Right. So, but anyway, what are your thoughts, David, on that?
I mean, I think it still kind of stems to, there isn't much, there just isn't, recognition or appreciation of the skill set. And I think that's more from an educational standpoint. Like, I think people, you know, amongst us, we're going to be blown away by the apes far more so than a lot of people that are just in the industry and voting, and they've seen this sort of thing before, and they may not see the subtle changes between this movie and the last Apes movie.
But do you, okay, keep going.
No, I mean, that's
so, I mean, okay, yeah. So they're not seeing necessarily changes, but what I also think, I mean, there was something that happened where slowly the visual effects industry has been losing respect a lot. You guys remember the first, when Life of Pi won the Oscar, that was a big deal, and how they got dismissed off the stage.
Right.
No one cared. Right.
Yeah. I remember texting you right after that, like, when that happened.
What
the hell just happened?
Right. Yeah.
Not good.
Yeah. And it changed everything. And there was a Life After Pi documentary where the studio that worked on Life of Pi were bankrupt right after that. There was a huge respect problem going on in visual effects, and no one cares. Right now, one of the other issues is that the studios are forcing the visual effects industry to become completely nomadic. They're having a hard time keeping their jobs if they decide that they don't want to move to the next subsidized location. And if you live in that area and you want to travel, that's great. And there's a lot of people who are having a wonderful time. But just as an example, my wife worked with someone as a flame artist, a compositor, and she worked with him again in a year. And she works in Burbank. And so a year later, he came back and worked with her. Between that 1 year period, he had to move to Vancouver, London, and New Zealand. So in 1 year, he had to move three major locations, change and uproot his entire life and do that, because that's how the visual effects world is right now. So what's also starting to happen because of that, a lot of people are leaving the visual effects industry and they're going into other areas and doing other things. So I think that the talent and the things that are happening in visual effects is now being used for interesting things, different things. And I think this is really cool. There's an opportunity now to where you're going to see people that are really smart, really good visual effects artists working for companies like Google and Apple and doing things that you didn't even know was possible. And the VR thing has taken off like crazy. Daniel knows that because a lot of our friends are working in VR.
Yep.
A lot of our friends are working in VR, like, including Daniel here. And so this is a new medium, new technology that's taking advantage of some really, really, really smart people who are also happen to be artists. And that's I think, one of the beauties of the visual effects industry is the balance between the art and science and how we have to do both. And again, that's a respect that I think that it doesn't happen as much as it should.
Yeah, a lot of times it's a little bit more technical than you would think.
Yeah.
Or than you, the people who are not visual effects related, would think.
It's more,
well,
go ahead, Dan.
I think, you know, I mean, Hollywood is and has always been actor and acting centric. I mean, it's not like writers have been given a fair amount of respect for years and years for like the screenplays and everything like that too. So I think VFX
absolutely not, but
not
look at what they're asked to write too, you know?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So I feel like VFX is just one part of the process in making a film that doesn't get the respect that I think it deserves.
It's true. It's true. And in fact, the other argument, you know, I remember hearing those types of things as well, where editors were saying, I could make an edit where that actor will lose the Oscar so quickly that the editor is also the person that's able to make a performance work through, you know, very, very intelligent editing. And that performance looks amazing because of the work of the editor, not necessarily the performance that what the actor was giving. So I think those are important things to note and to give credit to, the supporting things. Here's the thing, right? As an audience member, you're not falling in love with the visual effects. You're not falling in love even with the story. You're falling in love with the person that you're seeing on the screen. And therefore, that's why you make that association, right? You're looking at that person going, oh my God, it's amazing. Beautiful. The story, so, I mean, her story or his story means so much to me, not realizing like, It's not.
You're not talking about 50 Shades of Grey again, are you?
No.
Again?
I know. Can you just stop talking about it for 5 minutes? Because I know you love it, but.
I do. It's so, yeah. Yeah.
50 Shades of Chris.
50 Shades of Grey.
256 Shades of Grey.
There we go.
Well, we did 256 Shades of Grey. We did buy a couple of shades in the office, and then they were gray. And I looked at Law, I was like, we should have bought 50 of these.
Yeah, I walked into that one and got smack.
Is it gray or is it white and gold or is it black and blue?
Oh, jeez.
Right.
Jeez. Yeah. Have you been?
That's the question.
Yeah. Well, anyway. Okay. Well, these are good. Some of the points. So how do you think, what about my mission? My mission to try to reach out to Nerdist. What do you guys think about that idea? Do you think it's worth it?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Maybe he'll do a podcast with you and you can.
Yeah, I doubt it.
You can bring yourself.
Yeah, he's going to say Jeff Bridges, stand aside. I'm going to have Chris Nichols on the podcast. Yeah, that's not going to happen. but I'd like to reach out to them. I'd like to find a way to do that and see if maybe we can have a discussion about what visual effects actually is and how we can probably respect it more. Because I think that the audience out there, the general, the guys who were, like you were saying, who don't know or not, should have a chance to understand what actually happens in visual effects.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that goes to David's point about the education part of it. Right. Mm-hmm. And actually I think too, that, you know, when we talk about visual effects that frustrate us in terms of story, I almost boil it all down to explosions. It's almost like visual effects that help tell, like, the visual effects of Birdman and helping the continuous cameras or the visual effects of, like, you know, changing the faces and creatures or the scene in X-Men where he's, you know, he runs around the room and.
Yeah, but that was awesome.
It was amazing, right? So that's what I'm saying is there may just be, like, one category of visual effects that automatically turn people against or off to the idea of, like, oh yeah, that's all.
And then there's the other category of visual effects that you don't even see it.
It's invisible. Yeah. It's totally invisible.
Yeah.
And so to me, it's part of that education.
Yeah.
Part, you know, it's like, well, here's actually like,
this is bigger than what you think it is.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, like one of my favorite shot in, do you remember the movie Contact?
Yes.
Where she's running, it's like little girl. Jodie Foster,
yeah.
She's running in slow motion up the stairs.
I mention that shot every time. I love that shot.
And then like the camera's in front of her, and then it just switches to her like looking in the mirror and opening the medicine cabinet.
Right. It's a big long for those. The basically she's her father has a heart attack, and she's running to get
again. The, spoiler alert.
Damn it.
And she's running to get the pills. Right. So she's running and it turns into a slow motion shot and she's running towards camera. The camera is moving backwards, by the way, for those of you who do walkthroughs in architecture, move a camera backwards, not forwards. So the camera is moving backwards. So she's running towards camera. So we follow her as she's running. Then she goes up the steps and turns around because it's the steps have a return. So the camera is now turning around and going up and then the camera slowly pulls back. As her hand reaches and as she pulls back, you realize that the camera is actually shooting through a mirror of her opening the cabinet door to get the medicine. So it's the medicine cabinet door mirror, right? And the thing is that's confusing is like, how did the camera turn a corner and yet still be a reflection in the whole time? And so the beauty of that shot is that you didn't even realize what was happening, right, David?
Yeah.
It was so...
I mean, that to me is like a great example of an amazingly, like a well-done shot that you don't think about it. Doesn't it? It adds to the story. It makes it a very dramatic moment in the film, and
it's also
not an explosion.
And it's not an explosion, and it's also an extremely simple shot to do because all you got to do is put green screen on, on the mirror and composite it in. You do a really good job of it, but it's really incredible. You're right.
How many people in the public, right, do you think realize how much of Gravity was visual effects?
Oh, right.
Right, because there were people that are like, how the hell did they get cameras in space? You know, it's like,
right.
Really?
With a rocket? I mean, that's probably how I would do it. I don't know.
But I mean, seriously, that 97%
right.
of what you're seeing.
That plays to Yeah, that plays to Lon's point. Like with Game of Thrones, you notice people will immediately notice the dragons. They won't notice the set extensions and like the like work from people like MacaVision.
Right,
right. All the and like the all the environments.
Yeah, we didn't. They didn't build a medieval city, guys. They didn't do that.
It's but not just that like subtle landscape changes. Yeah. And stuff like and, that
and,
too.
And people who say, "Oh, miniatures are great," it's like, yeah, but did you see Game of Thrones? That's the equivalent of a miniature now, and it's even more amazing.
Yeah.
And the thing that, oh, here's another thing that I remember during the whole Life of Pi thing, when people were like, there was people on Twitter that were making comments like, well, I don't like visual effects movies anyway. I'd much rather watch a movie that's like Lincoln, right? They wanted to respect that. And so someone sent an image of Lincoln where it was just Lincoln and then the rest was green screen behind him.
Right.
Because yeah. Like, how the hell do you think they put Lincoln in, you know, in 200 years ago or whatever, you know?
They found some footage. And HD footage.
Yeah, HD footage of what Washington looked like back then. And so no one knows how much is being done. A lot is being done. Well, there's another argument. And one of the other funnier things that they were talking, people were joking about the movie, even though it bombed completely, but it's a joke. They were talking about the movie Sex Tape and saying that the amount of visual effects that was done in that movie should not have it nominated for an Oscar because of the amount of actor body work that's being done, which is, again, there was an article about that and about some of the people that are doing work on actors that you don't know are happening, but actors are heavily, heavily being modified and fixed. And that's happening a lot and people don't even realize it. So yeah, those are all visual effects, and those are all very talented artists that are doing that kind of stuff. And it really should be more
celebrated.
Celebrated.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, right? Okay, so let's just put it that way. Is the thing that makes a visual effect really awesome is when you don't even know it's a visual effect?
Sometimes. I think, to me, it runs the gamut. Like,
right.
To me, it doesn't matter.
I think that's more impressive just because I kinda, it makes me happy. Like, hey, that's cool. I did not know that was fake.
Right.
Right.
You know?
Right.
That, to me, that's cool. And I don't know.
In my mind, one of the, you know, you mentioned Star Wars, and I think you're absolutely right. Star Wars is an important thing. But one of the most important movies to me is the Forrest Gump one, right?
Mm, yeah.
Because Forrest Gump, to me, was the pinnacle of the invisible effects, right? Where, oh, shit, there's just Tom Hanks hanging out with Nixon. You know,
right. Like,
where did that happen?
He is not that good at ping pong, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah,
exactly, right? And so there's incredible stuff that happened there, and I think Zemeckis really embraced that. He did an incredible job. So it was Zemeckis who directed that, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Though I have to say that if I see another feather falling shot or follow the you know, the dandelion or the paper bag, like I'm pretty tired of that.
What if it explodes?
But that's what
then I would love it, Daniel. I would love it.
You mean like the beginning of Men in Black with a bug and it's like and then it hits by the it hits the like windshield.
The windshield.
Well, one of my favorites is Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? When a cow gets hit by the car.
Oh yeah.
And then shot up.
I got a story about that.
Yeah,
I got a story about favorites. That. Yeah, so, oh, Lord, not the livestock. So I got a story about that. Again, very good effects, like you said. And Digital Domain did those cow shots, by the way.
I haven't seen it in a while. Does it still they hold up?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say that it wasn't challenging, but it's just they did a really good job. Their Digital Domain is known for doing excellent compositing, so they just integrated in there really well. But what I believe that they didn't, the PETA or the animal rights people were worried about that being real cows. So they had to, I may be wrong with the story, so forgive me, but I believe they had to come to Digital Domain so they could prove to them that it was a visual effects and show them how it was a CG cow.
You know,
back then, I mean, now everyone would know that, but back then I think people were like, that's no way.
That's a really interesting point because now you see a lot more breakdowns, right? There's breakdowns that are a lot more publicly available. It used to be that it was pretty rare. You only got to see it inside the studio's lobby or whatever.
Right.
But now you see breakdowns for
everything. Well, they didn't have YouTube back then.
Do you think that's making influence? Do you think that's helping create an appreciation for what's going on? I mean, we'll use the Game of Thrones ones as an example. That one came out.
It went viral, right?
Everybody,
yep.
It starts to get picked up by The Verge and, you know, other places like that.
Well, I think I think it does. And I think, you know, here's another perfect example of, you know, Sean, who just started in an office, is a great guy, right?
Yep.
He's working on our marketing stuff, but he didn't have a background in visual effects. So he's learning about what we're doing and he's doing a fantastic job of that. But we were looking at the breakdown of X-Men and, you know, Magneto destroying the stadium. And he's like, oh, that was all CG. It's like, well, of course. It was like, well, I thought they just did the dust and the thing. It's like, no.
They didn't blow up JFK.
And they don't have, it's easier to do a CG stadium than to actually take over an entire stadium for like several days to shoot it.
You know? Then blow it up.
And then blow it up, yeah.
And levitate it.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's like gravity, right? And I'm not dismissing Sean's naivete in it because he just doesn't know. But that's how good they are. That's how amazing it is people don't even realize that it's CG, and that's how good the CG has gotten.
Yeah.
And when it's a miniature, it looks like a miniature, and that's fine. I like the look of miniatures. It's great, but it's not realistic in a lot of ways.
And we're like hipsters now, like, oh yeah, that was visual effects, but you probably didn't notice that.
Right.
That was totally CG, but I guess you didn't notice.
Right. Yeah.
You probably haven't heard of DD before.
You probably wouldn't understand.
Yeah. But I think actually the hipsters are the ones that are like, oh, it's much better, you know, when it was all done practically. It was so cool back then, you know, look at what they do. And I think there's good reasons for practical effects.
It's the same people like running around with a Holga camera.
Right. Yeah.
Plastic lens.
Me.
Yeah. Well, people want to Instagram their pictures to make it look like it's a crappy picture, you know.
Make it look like a 40-year-old Polaroid or something.
Right.
I mean, there is absolutely an amazing skill set that goes into building these miniatures and ships. And it's a very tangible thing because
I am not dismissing that at all. Not at all. Yeah.
I grew up building models and stuff. So it's easy to kind of wrap your head around that stuff.
One of my favorites is the Thing in the 1980s Thing by John Carpenter. The models of the creatures, you know, when they're half deformed and everything, that stuff is cool.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Or when you walk around like ILM and you see the ghosts from Ghostbusters and, you know, and the whole hallway of miniatures. I mean,
yeah.
Or the hallway of matte paintings. I mean, that's. You know,
I remember when I was working at Sony, I got to go on a tour. We've done a lot of tours, but you go to the matte painting warehouse. And it's just rolls and rolls and rolls and rolls of these matte paintings. And the matte paintings, just to put in perspective, are several hundred feet long and, you know, 100 feet high. You know, there was one that was unraveled and they have it, you know, sort of put up and it was an airport. You pretty much looked like you were in an airport. Yep. You know, it was like all the planes are back there and everything else. And those are great. But it doesn't mean that a digital matte painter is doing a bad job.
Exactly.
And the digital matte painters are incredible. Some you get, you know, Game of Thrones is another perfect example. That background is all done. Pretty much almost every sky that you see that's in any movie, guarantee you, we replace the skies in almost every stuff we do just to make it look that much more beautiful. Mm-hmm. And they're done
but
by
it's
matte.
It's amazing. If you're a filmmaker now, I mean, you now have, multiple tools in your arsenal. You have this huge toolbox now where you can go with digital matte painting, if you want to go for a miniature look like they did with Budapest Hotel, which I know has got CG in it as well. But it's a stylistic choice that people have now that they did not have recently.
Right. Right. And that was part of their narrative, right? I mean, they're going to use that. If they did that in Game of Thrones, it would not look good. It wouldn't be authentic. Right. It would look gimmicky. In Grand Budapest Hotel, it was supposed to look gimmicky. Right. That was the whole idea. Yeah,
that was the
whole point was to be cliche and gimmicky and everything it was supposed to do. It wasn't trying to look like, oh my God, look at that amazing thing. It just looked like a weird little hotel with a weird little thing, you know, and that was the point of it. So I think that's a really important part to make is that you're right. It's the style and you can't just say, well, I wish they did things practically, because I think that there's points, levels to all of that. And practically sometimes is good because you can do things that are not possible in CG yet. But and you can get things faster, right? Miguel talked about how many practical effects he actually does. Mm-hmm. And those are great, you know, and just, you know, making smoke and everything else. Talking to Doug Trumbull, right? Yep. When I talked to Doug Trumbull and I saw the stuff he did on UFOTOG, he knows how to do practical effects very, very well. And so they did a huge amount of practical effects for UFOTOG, where he's doing smoke and water and all the stuff that he added, and it was all composited really beautifully in. But yeah, they didn't use a fluid dynamics to do that. He shot it practically because that's what he does. That's what he knows how to do.
At some point, you got to say, well, which way is going to be easier? Which way is going to look better? Which way is going to be more efficient?
Right.
Yeah.
And then do that.
Yep.
I don't know.
Funny thing. I was talking to him about 2001. Because he worked on it.
I should just note that David said he was talking to Doug Trumbull about 2001. That's kind of an awesome statement.
Yeah, which was, I just want to point that out that I did talk to him.
Yeah.
I touched his shoulder maybe a little too often. Maybe I made him a little uncomfortable.
Yeah. All right.
But
restraining order.
But he was talking about how when they did 2001 and they did the matte painting for Earth.
Yeah.
That was before we had any pictures of Earth. Like, that was their best guesstimate on what Earth looked like from space.
Right.
And it was pretty, you don't even think about it. And now you look at it.
I don't think about that.
You right. don't think about it. That's amazing.
We've never seen Earth from space when 2001 came out.
That was a damn good guess.
It still looks good.
Damn.
It's a damn good guess.
I want to watch that again now. Thanks, David.
I mean, that to me is pretty, that's pretty impressive.
And the moon was actually pretty impressive too. Now that you think about it, they hadn't been to the moon yet.
Yeah.
Yep. Although we could look at the moon with telescopes.
Yeah, but you know.
Kind of hard to look back at the Earth with telescopes.
But you're just looking at it. No matter how many telescopes you put up there, I mean, you can't see that level of detail or understanding of it. I mean, it looked. It was believable moon for sure.
It's been a while since I've seen that.
You know what's funny is that Karen had never seen 2001.
Really?
And it wasn't until a few years ago that she watched it with me. But because that movie has been parodied and so many times. It basically just looked like a gigantic cliche of everything that she's ever seen.
So she saw it and it felt like Spaceballs.
Yes.
My second favorite.
You know, she was like, you know, she's thinking about like, oh, like the you know, oh my God, or Hal, the little eyes, like, oh, this is hilarious. And it's like, no, it's not. It was freaking scary. You know, so yeah, it's been parodied. Someone etched it. It was like, it was impossible for her to watch it seriously. You know, when she saw the apes on the planet, you know, doing all their stuff, it's like, all she could think of was History of the World, you know? So yeah, it's pretty funny. All right. So here's what I want to do and ask some of our listeners to do. And if you go, I'll put it in the description in the beginning, but if you go and out there and send out a tweet or whatever, you can do it on Google+. You can do it on Facebook. I'm sure they're there. Look up Nerdist and send out and say, you know, at Nerdist and put us on there at CG Labs, at CG _labs, in case you guys don't know our Twitter. And just put a little blurb about, it's like, you know, really should listen to CG Garage and respect VFX. Or just put something out there and see if that works. I don't know if I have enough listeners for this to really be effective, but I'd like to try.
But we can start the hashtag, or I'm sure that it exists, hashtag respect VFX.
Respect VFX. And I'm going to continue this theme for a while. I think I'm going to have, there's another speaker. I'm not going to spoil it. No spoilers alert. Who's coming in later next week. And I'm going to speak to him about it. And I'd love to sort of pitch that idea to him and sort of put it out there again. And I'd just like to see, you know, hey, let's go out there. Let's try to get some respect for what we do and understand. And please don't say anything negative to Chris Hardwick or Nerdist, because he's doing an incredible job and I have huge respect for it. I just want to be able to use the opportunity to use his medium as a way to push what we're trying to do and understand that we are not to blame for bad movies or why things look bad. What we're doing is actually some of the most amazing work out there. And if it wasn't done for movies, it would probably be some of the most groundbreaking work out there. Like the amount of stuff we do, like let's just use Planet of the Apes, hair, fur, the way the shine works, understanding lighting, cameras, just all of that technology that's happened into that, making that happen is incredible. But because it's being done on Planet of the Apes, a remake of a cult film, no one cares. And that's what I think is a shame. So anyway, is there anything else you guys want to add? What's your favorite VFX shot that you can think of of all time? I liked yours, David. It's actually one of my favorites. The one from Contact. It is really one of my top ones.
That's a tricky question. I don't know. I actually don't watch a whole lot of movies.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with The Cow.
The Cow? That's a good one,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, I like that one. I like that movie.
The Cow. You can't think of one?
Come back to me.
Okay.
I'm going through the catalog of explosions.
All right. David, do you have anyone besides the Sony one?
That's a tough one. You kind of threw it. I was thinking about Amelie.
Amelie? Which one?
Yeah. Where she's skipping stones
on the
bridge.
Yeah.
And that kind of crazy camera move that they did.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think of the ones that really stand out to me. I remember one that really shocked me was, I have a good one. A terrible movie, but a great visual effect shot is the scene in Panic Room when they go through the kitchen.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah, that was incredible at the time. And I haven't seen that in a long time, but I remember that just going crazy. Same studio, by the way, speaking of Amelie, Boof Studio did that one. And then they also did the stuff for City of Lost Children with The Flea. I don't know if you guys remember The Flea
and
City of Lost
Children. That's one of my favorite movies, by the way.
Yep. So those are great. And by the way, this is just me coming off the top of my head because I asked a question to you guys and I didn't have an answer either. but if anyone else has an idea of what's their favorite VFX shot, let us know and put it out there. Put it in the comments or tweet us or whatever. All right. We are actually, with all of us trying to get the audio right, we're probably just under an hour, but I think it's a pretty good podcast. How do you guys feel about that? Feel good?
Yeah. Well, I kind of want to bring up one more thing. Yeah. When you were talking about why people don't like or say they don't like visual effects, I think it's just because you're looking at the, quote, the good old days. You know, you always remember things better than they were, you know?
Yeah, nostalgia isn't what it used to be.
Yeah. But, you know, you look at cars or, you know, houses or whatever, everybody always assumes, oh, well, it used to be better.
Right. Remember when they made it
back
with steel.
When it was handmade, when it was heavy, when it, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, cars were not safe.
Yeah.
When we didn't have seatbelts.
That's right. Power steering is for wimps. Nah, it's actually pretty nice.
I mean, I think that's kind of an idea that a lot of people.
I think you're right.
You don't even realize that you're doing it. The grass is always greener.
Was always greener.
But okay, let's use that car analogy again, because I think it's a very good one, because Sid Mead brought it up when you were over at Trojan Horse. Is he was talking about how you take a badge off. He used to do a lot of concept designs in cars, and cars were crazy all over the place back in the 50s and 60s. There was just an insane amount of different designs going on. Now he goes, you take a badge off all the cars, you won't recognize what brand it is. It could be a Honda, it could be a Hyundai, it could be a Buick, it could be a BMW. They all look the same. So we've all gotten that point. I think visual effects has actually got to the point too. Incredible technology, all looks same.
Yeah, well, it's very saturated with, you know, all the big movies, you know, have big effects in them, you know?
Right. So I think your car analogy is an excellent one, Daniel. I like that one. And people are nostalgic for the old look where things had looked different, right? I mean, I'm in the same...
Instagram, we talked about that already. The pictures.
Right.
They wanted to look like old pictures.
Right.
Because somehow that conjures up a memory of something
better. But then when someone says, oh, no, that's the way it needs to look, and then everyone does exactly the same thing. I mean, look at my computer, right? It looks... It's like a black MacBook, but it's not. So it's basically like they all look the same. And everyone tries to say that's the way it needs to look. Someone says sets the trend, and then no one varies from it at all. So, yeah, it's an important part. I think it's a good one. All right, David, any closing comments?
Rest in peace, Leonard Nimoy.
Oh, yeah.
That's all.
Yeah, live long. Did you see the tweet that someone did from space?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Oh, someone did a tweet in space where they basically, it was from the space station where they give the Vulcan sign, and it said live long and prosper. And it was,
nice.
Makes me cry. It was beautiful. And his last tweet was actually about having a wonderful life. Did you see that?
I did.
It was a couple of days before he died. He put a tweet out there about, you know, just the beauty of life. And it was yeah, pretty emotional. Rest in peace, Landon. Good one. All right, guys, we're going to let the last bucket drop. You guys cool? Bloop. Actually, no, we have the sound effect.
Gina, oh,
we
do?
Huh. Yeah, Gina and I, we foleyed it. We dropped the bucket outside. So I'm going to drop it. All right. All right, guys. Thank you.